morning. We'll call the February 4th, 2014 Sussex County Council meeting to order. First thing will be the agenda approval. Mr. Lawson.
Morning, Mr. President and Council. At this time, we have no amendments to the agenda.
And motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Phillips.
Second.
Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Motion carried.
And I have a question. As far as procedure, I have a request to discuss something on a future agenda. When can I do, just ask that a general question? When is that appropriate?
I would think, why don't we do that under additional business?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Sure. Thank you. We had the minutes of January 28th. Any concerns, corrections, or additions? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. There are several letters, and they were all thank yous for funding. The first is Food Bank of Delaware, CNS, which is a commercial newspaper service, for help in putting together a poster, the Coverdale Crossroads Community Council, Inc., the Ark of Delaware, and the Community Food Pantry. That is all,
thank
Mr. President.
Any questions from Council?
Well, I got one that's not really, that we can't really do much about, but I think I should make, for the record, let it be known that I did get it, a copy of it, and my name's at the bottom. It's to the Delaware Office of Alcohol Beverage Control Commissioner, and it's, if you'd listen to the radio, you probably heard all about it this morning. It's the people who wrote it are Mr. and Mrs. Funk, F-U-N-K, Port Lewis, Unit Owners 56 in Lewis, and they're concerned about some possible music to be played at the ferry terminals. I would like to make sure you know we did get that. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Anything else from Council? Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. First item this morning is recognizing the participants that are here today that helped us in the Caroling on the Circle food drive for 2013. As always, after the conclusion of the food drive and the holiday season, we like to invite the folks that participated in this annual event to come in and be recognized for all their efforts to help those that are less fortunate during the holiday season receive food items that they are greatly needed. Today, we're going to hand out plaques and certificates to folks that are present, and the plaques are going to any organization that raised over 1,000 items, and we have quite a few of those, and then we've got certificates for those that are also here, and I can see that we're joined by some of the schoolmates that helped participate in this program as well, so that's always a joy to have them with us. Okay, so we're going to start with the plaques, Mr. President.
Tell them what that is so nobody gets scared of it.
It's gone.
That is some ongoing construction that we are going to stop here in a minute. I will call the names. Hopefully everyone is here of the folks that participated. We'll get some pictures taken and try to move right along on this. So I'm going to start with the plaques. Again, anyone that receives a plaque raised over 1,000 items. And the first recipient with 1,200 items is Colonial East. LP, Steve Class, and Tissa Johnson are here.
Thank you very much for your help. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Next is the Long Neck Elementary School. I think we have a teacher and some students here. They raised 1,206 items. Come forward, please.
Here you go. Come on here. Come on here. Don't be bashful. Come around. Here we go. Here we go. Come on. Kind of get on both sides.
He just looks scary.
Yeah. I scare myself sometimes.
Yeah.
Come in a little closer here. There you go. There you go.
Put you right in front here. Come on. Thank you. And if I can get you.
You hold this plaque down. How about that? There we go. There you are.
I don't really know. This is
okay. You good? Okay. thank you all very much for your help. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Next, we have Fuqua Uri and Willard, 1,250 food items.
This is neither one of those. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did Tim Willard actually bring in some food items?
Tim. Come on, Tim. You get a picture?
No, you sure?
I'll photograph well.
Next is Milton Elementary School, 2,160 items. Anyone here from Milton? Okay. First State Manufactured Housing Association of Delaware, Jen Allen, with 2,500 items.
Thank you very much. That's very nice. There you go. Good. Thank you again. Thank you very much.
Next, we have Delaware Manufactured Homeowners Association, 3,034 items.
Wow.
I believe we have members of the Rehoboth Bay Tenants Association here with us today.
That's correct.
You hold it. There you go.
Okay.
How about that?
They really want me to be there in their picture.
I'm sure they do.
They do.
I'd run down there. Just jump out in front of the camera.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Sam, whatever.
And again, leading the pack this year is Pat's Aircraft with 9,005 items.
Wow, that's awesome.
Pat's does a wonderful job. Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Is Mark here, Frank? Okay, I just want to recognize Mark Rothel. He donates the pod that sits out there for over a month that we have our campaign to pack the pod. He donates that and his time for delivery. So I want to recognize Mark for that as well. Okay, moving on to the schools. We're just going to go in order here. Beacon Middle School, 600. Anyone from Beacon? Okay. Georgetown Elementary School. Looks like we got some folks from Georgetown, 500 items.
There we go. Yeah. Come right on down here.
Thanks for coming.
Okay, I'd like to have this young lady over here.
Oh, here comes.
And then if you would step over here in front of her, or next to her on the side. And you step back just a little bit. Okay.
Don't block me out.
We're good.
There you go. Thank you very much. Thank you all very much for coming.
Anyone from Georgetown Middle School? Georgetown Middle School. Georgetown Middle raised 650 items. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
HOB Elementary School, HOB, raised 730. How about Little Einstein's Preschool?
Here they come. They're here.
All right.
There they go.
275 items from Little Einstein.
Little guys.
Where are they?
It's fantastic.
Good morning. How are you? Good morning.
Steve, do you have a relative in the picture? Oh.
Good. There you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mariner Middle School. Mariner raised 530 items. Millsboro Middle School. Millsboro raised 575 items. And last, Sussex County Association of Realtors. Anyone from Sussex County Association of Realtors? They raised 850 items. Okay, thank you very much for attending and participating this morning. Your efforts collectively, we were able to raise 27,888 items for those less fortunate this year. Again, we will appreciate all of your efforts. We will be back next year looking for more participation and hopefully a greater amount of collections for our friends and neighbors. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
All right, kids, back to school.
Mean George Cole.
Great, don't want to miss anything.
From here. Okay. Should have been me in that picture, right? Yeah, see? Next time, you tell me. Okay, right.
Okay. Next item of business is the County Administrator's Report for February 4th, 2014. Item number one, Advisory Committee on Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities for Sussex County will hold a special meeting on Tuesday, February 11th at 9:30 at the Sussex County West Complex located at 22215 North DuPont Boulevard in Georgetown. A copy of the agenda is attached. Item number two, per the attached Delaware State Police Activity Report for December, there were 3,443 total traffic arrests and 1,286 total criminal arrests. Of that, 484 were felony and 802 were misdemeanor criminal arrests. Of the total hours spent, 41% were spent on criminal investigations. And last, item number three attached, please find the call statistics for the Fire and Ambulance Call Board for the month of December and the year 2013. There were 13,186 total calls handled in the month of December. Of those 911 calls, 77% were made from wireless phones. In 2013 total, there was a small decrease in the 911 calls handled as opposed to an increase in the number of incidents dispatched. 911 calls decreased from 1,007,388 in 2012 to 1,006,58 in 2013. But the number of cellular-generated 911 calls increased from 81,211 to 81,777. In all, total incidents dispatched increased from 29,350 to 30,148. Of the 30,148 incidents, 4,638 were fire, and 25,510 were EMS incidents. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir.
Al Godwin.
Legislative update.
Yes, sir. Mr. President, members of council, I'll review our current legislative update with you. I believe it's relatively self-explanatory down through page 9. On page 10, I want to review some things with you of current activity. As you know, the General Assembly is out of session now until the 18th of March in their Joint Finance Committee meetings. Senate Bill number 6, which was the better known as the minimum wage increase bill, was signed by the governor on the 30th of last month into law. That will change the minimum wage up to $7.75 an hour effective June 1st of this year and up to $8.25 per hour June 1st of next year. Next item is House Bill 167, and with this one, I'm going to ask for some support from our HR director. Mrs. Brewington is here to explain this to you in more detail. By the way, the bill has already passed the House, and it's currently assigned to the Senate Industrial Relations Committee. Can you make a kid? Needs a help.
Working here is very rough.
Yes, good morning. Okay, so ban the box bill, House Bill 167, that Hal Godwin was speaking of, states that it shall be unlawful for employment practice for any public employer to inquire into or consider the criminal record, criminal history, or credit score of an applicant for employment during the initial application process up to and including the first interview. Public employer may inquire into or consider an applicant's criminal record, criminal history, or credit score after it is determined that the applicant is otherwise qualified and has conditionally offered the applicant the position. So basically, that is what we are doing today, is doing a condition of employment for anyone that we extend an offer to, stating that pending a criminal background check and a drug and alcohol test, that their employment would still be intact. If we were to receive anything, any adverse information on that, then, of course, we would rescind the offer based upon the infraction or what the information stated, if it disqualified them from a position. Such inquiry shall be limited to convictions constituting felonies in Delaware or in any other state or jurisdiction, if committed in Delaware, would constitute a felony for 10 years following release from custody or sentencing for an individual who was never in custody, and a misdemeanor convictions in Delaware or any other state or jurisdiction for 5 years. So we met, County Administrator Ty Lawson, Hal Godwin and myself met on this, and we discussed this, and our recommendation is we are in favor of this bill as it states to not disqualify a person from applying for a position or interviewing for a position if they qualify for that position. The one issue that we do not like is the language that states that we cannot inquire anything 10 years or 5 years, 10 years from the felony or sentencing, or 5 years for the misdemeanor. Basically, if a person is applying for a position, we need to know everything about that person. We're investing in that person to be our employer, our employee. So when we look at a person, we interview them, we are looking at their past performance, their past employment history, and that includes anything that if they were incarcerated or charged with anything, convicted. So for us, that's part of the whole ethic, integrity. So we would like to still see that information. So our recommendation is in for this bill, but striking that language.
And that only applies to government employers, or is that the whole state?
They're looking right now as public employer, but they're also talking about any private that has public any contracts.
Well, under that, they would have never found Dr. Bradley to be a problem, would they?
Right. Well,
was he convicted?
He.
I don't think so, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I don't know the ins and outs of that.
Okay. Well, that was.
But with us, when we extend an offer to a person, we look at all applicants. We look to see if they qualify for the position. And then in conjunction with a hiring manager, we look at the top candidates to interview. So therefore, we would bring everyone in to interview for the position. Once we went through, we selected our candidates. At that time, we would select our candidate. And then we would go look into the references. We would also, we cannot ask the question, have you ever been convicted of a crime?
It can't be on the initial application.
It cannot be on the initial application, nor can we ask that question even in the interview. It's until after that process.
That's that state law, federal law? What is that?
That's this bill.
This bill would
this
say
this bill.
But currently, right now, we could?
Currently,
ask
we
those
do.
Questions?
Currently, we do. It's on our application now.
And then the state's saying we would eliminate. My only problem is we can invest a lot of time into going through, and I've seen it when we hire people here. Critical people, you go through a lot of interviews and a lot of expense and time of staff to, select somebody, and then that doesn't seem to me the time then to go look into them. I think that anything like that would be.
That's true. The only other point I'd like to make is, for instance, say that we had a person that, as a young adult, they did something very silly and they got charged with that. And it was a one-time issue. I wouldn't want to ban them from the workforce or to be an otherwise good qualified employee.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to not give them that chance to apply for a position and interview and for us to determine what that infraction was and the position that they're applying for.
Is there also, if we find out there is an infraction, there's nothing in writing gives you any kind of threshold to say that this infraction is okay, this one wasn't? I mean, there's just no standard or line drawn. It just
it's
I guess if you have somebody handling money, you don't want somebody who's been stealing money.
Right. It's not black and white. But what it does say is once you do extend the offer, you do a criminal background check, you look at what the infraction is, you look at the time that it's been since that infraction. So if it was something that it was a person that it was 20 years ago that committed this, say they were kids and they decided, hey, I'm going to burn down this barn, for instance. You know, this is just going to be fun to do because it's on an abandoned property. Just poor judgment. I wouldn't want to ban them from the workforce for a mistake that they made.
Well, at that point, you will already have interviewed them and checked references, and then you look at that.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Under this bill.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And other applicants could have moved on, and because they got rejected, and then they may have taken other jobs. So then if we had to go back, do we go back to the list? Do we start over again? I mean, I would like the state to just stay out of the county's business of hiring and firing, because it's in our best interest to get the good, you know, the best people we can.
Yeah. If
with
this,
the least amount of problems.
Right. If this does pass, this just means we don't know. It's a little bit more work on the back end if we go through the interview process.
I think it's just useless
intervention. What law is pushing this? What's pushing this? What state laws?
I believe that this initiative may be coming from the governor's office.
And
I believe that it's part of an effort that his administration is undertaking to rehire people who have been in trouble. But one of the problems with recidivism in the prison system is that people are released from custody and can't find jobs. And I believe that this is aimed at trying to open those doors, those employment doors.
Karen, Ms. Burlington, I think I heard you say that they could not do this up to the first interview.
Correct.
If we had a second interview with our top three, at that point, may we inquire?
Generally, in the first interview, if there is a break in employment, they're going to have to explain. We can't come out and just say, have you ever been convicted of?
I understand, but
we can now. We can't if this bill gets passed.
Correct.
Okay. You specifically referenced.
We can now.
Yes, we can now.
Perfect.
But with this bill, we would not be able to come out and up to the first interview and say, have you ever been convicted of a felony or a misdemeanor, and when did that take place? Instead, you know, you would look at, there's a break of employment in here, you know, and you would inquire, but you can't press that applicant to disclose that.
Are we able to do, but we are able to do criminal background checks.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we'll find out. We don't have to ask them.
Right. All of our offers are a condition of employment.
Watching how this current General Assembly seems to be running with issues despite our opinion, it almost seems to me that we certainly oppose it, I think, George, in spirit, but in reality, we may need to press for an amendment that would get through. And if that is the case, that you see it how going through, I think Ms. Brewington's suggestion that we ask that they not put time limits on how far back we can look is a good suggestion. If this bill were to go through, though, we could make it a policy to have second interviews with multiple applicants and, to some degree, get around this provision.
Possibly, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, possibly.
Right.
Yeah,
well, I mean,
think
with that said, I'd make a motion. If,
well, wait, let me just throw one more thing on the table. Is it possible for Hal and with staff to calculate what it costs to do an interview, possibly? How many times, like if we use Todd as an example, because he's probably the most current one where we went through a number of interviews, had people come here from various places they had to make travel time. Anyway, just the cost of doing an interview, and my thoughts are that this will just add substantially to the cost.
It's time. Time is money.
Right. Of doing it, and that again, I don't like the idea that we wait till we find the person we like, then we do all the investigating. Just it's illogical in my opinion. But
we are currently doing that now, though. So if we extend the offer and we do have something that comes back, we generally have a second candidate. So when we go through the interview process, there is generally a panel of folks, at least three people on the panel. Mm-hmm. But what we do is we'll have a first candidate and a second candidate.
I'd be surprised if Kent County's not doing something similar, and I'd be surprised if New Castle County's not doing something similar. And I'm just surprised. Why do we need, you know, some more regulations to kind of put us in a corner. So I don't know. I understand we're doing a lot of this stuff, but I hate to see us not have the flexibility to maybe change our procedure if we think it's necessary to ask certain questions.
Yeah, I understand what they're after, but my district has experienced a very, very unhappy situation. And from what I've read, we should have investigated more than we did. And I'm interested in the county being as careful as possible when you hire. Mm-hmm. So whatever that amendment that would call for, but I don't like the, okay. I don't like the.
Your people are your biggest investment in an
yes.
organization.
And I'm.
And the cost of having to remove somebody if we make a mistake. That's another huge cost. So.
It would not be removed if the person was offered the position based upon a successful background check. Mm-hmm. They had not started yet. So if something did show on their criminal background check and we had to rescind the offer, we would then move on to our second candidate.
But what if we actually hire them and they're working for us and then we end up finding out we made...
Yeah, we generally do our background checks.
Well, I know, but what
first.
If we miss something and it surfaces and we've already hired the person and... You know, in other words, it just seems cumbersome, so I don't know. I'm not.
Then we fired the personnel director.
Yeah.
We wouldn't do that. I think.
How do you think you feel comfortable with your direction?
I think the direction the council would like to see is an amendment removing the one 10 and the 1 5-year restriction from the bill at a minimum.
Right. Yes, if that does not occur, then we need to have some kind of an amendment tried to attach to it, too.
Well,
right.
At a maximum, we oppose the bill altogether. Is that right, Mr. Cole?
Well, we're already doing it. We're already.
Ms. Deaver?
Well, I'm from Lewis, absolutely.
Yeah. So first and foremost, bill. How we oppose the bill.
Okay.
But should you see it running, then try to get the amendment in there to strike the 10 and 5-year provisions.
There will be some time to discuss it in the Senate committee that's in now. We have several weeks before they go back in session, so... I'll have time to meet with the committee chair and have some discussions about our discomfort with the bill. That's no problem.
Well, it also, when the background check can be performed and not, you know, right now we can perform a background check at any time?
No, we extend the offer and then we do the background check. We don't do it before.
I mean, but right now, because there's no laws, could we possibly?
We wouldn't want to do that because of the discrimination laws right now. We would not want to do that now. We would like to extend the offer, and that's part of our procedures.
Okay.
We extend the offer,
yeah.
And then we do the background check, and then the person, because generally the person has to give at least 2 weeks' notice anyway to their employer. It doesn't take us but a couple of days to get those results back.
Ms. Brewington, could we, on the application, not ask them if they are a previous felon or a felon, but indicate to them that this background check will occur prior to hiring of anyone to maybe discourage those folks from even applying?
We currently have that now.
Will this law forbid that?
We have the information that states that they will have to go through a criminal background check. So that is already in place. So we would
but
not
will
need to
this
change
law
it.
Affect that?
No.
Okay.
Just they don't have to disclose that on the application.
Okay.
Question, Mr. Brewington. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Next, Mr. Godwin.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Another bill that I wanted to bring to your attention is Senate Bill 159. This is relatively new. It just passed the Senate. But this legislation provides clarification with respect to the placement, installation, and maintenance of gateway signs to boundaries of political subdivisions and established non-incorporated areas of the state. I'll tell you why I wanted to bring this bill to your attention. I have gotten some complaints lately, one in particular, about a subdivision that really isn't a recorded subdivision. And Lawrence is aware of this, and he and I have discussed this a few times. The people that live in this development want the state to put one of those signs about front that says, welcome to whatever. We'll say, welcome to Cinderberry. And since... Or Possum Point. And since the area is not on record with us as being a subdivision with a name, it just kind of happened over the years, the state won't put the sign up. And the neighbors would really like to have this sign put up because every other community in the area has a gateway sign.
Mine doesn't.
This legislation would provide the ability for DelDOT to go ahead and put the sign up without it having to be a recorded subdivision on our records. I think that's what this bill is after. I've discussed it with Lawrence. He doesn't have a problem with it. Is he in the room? By the way.
Yeah.
And, well, Lawrence, you can tell us what you think then if you want to sit here.
I mean, it seems to me a no-brainer. It doesn't cost us a thing. We're not paying for the sign, are we?
Yeah, but I can't get them to put up speed limit signs on Fisher Road. I can't get them to dig out some of these ditches alongside the road. I mean, you know, they say, no, we can't. There's not enough money. We're going to have them put up those signs. That, to me, is number two. And
you think they got their priorities askew?
I think they may. You know, I was at a meeting last night, Cool Spring meeting, and they're getting nowhere, and they're asking for it's about safety. So... Your request is about.
This one issue is about the gateway sign.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gateway sign is basically a blue sign with Cesar Rodney on it that says "Welcome to," and we're assuming this is oriented towards Possum Point because Possum Point doesn't really have a subdivision title. Possum Point is four or five sections of lots that were created by individuals, and I think one of them said, "I'm just trying to remember what the exact word was, like which end at Possum Point." So it's in the title of the plot, but it's only for that one little section. And that was just a person's name with a reference that they're at Possum Point. It's just a marking and out on this point, just off Iron Branch going into Indian River.
So that's where it's coming from, the request?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. We think that's what it's coming from.
Because these folks have been talking with me and with Lawrence and I about, can we tell DelDOT it's okay?
Yeah.
And what we can't tell DelDOT is that their policy is askew. All we can tell them is that the property they're referencing was never recorded as a subdivision, not done all at one time, like most properties are.
It's not
developed.
Recorded as Possum Point, for example. You can go to Plantations. Plantation has a title. There's a sign on Plantation Roads.
Midway Acres is a subdivision, but we don't have room for a sign like that.
I know. I don't know if there's a limit on the number of lots either in that sign ordinance.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't really have a problem with the proposal. It's just a naming of a
area.
Be
aware of it because it would have some reflection on the way we do land use, and it's coming from the state. I know how you feel about those things. I wanted you to be aware of this, that they're trying to. The General Assembly is considering making this change so that DelDOT can put the sign up.
And the taxpayer will pay for it, basically. So, I mean,
like all the rest of the signs.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They have a Possum Point Road sign there, and that's all they have.
Right.
If I could get them to agree to put up a speed limit signs on Fisher Road, I would be happy, but I guess you can't do that.
One other bill that I wanted to bring to your attention is relatively new. It was introduced in the House last week, House Bill 243. This bill relates to jurisdiction over agricultural leases. As you probably are well aware, many pieces of farmland are leased from the landowner to a farmer so that the farmer can expand his crop and the land is put to use, but it's not necessarily the owner farming it. And it's not been clear of any clear jurisdiction over those kinds of documents and the possession of those leases. So this bill proponents to do that. Currently, possession actions involving rental of residential or commercial property fall within the jurisdictional within the exclusive jurisdiction of the Justice of the Peace Court. There is no clear statement of jurisdiction for agricultural leases through the possession issues though the possession issues are similar. This legislation provides that the Justice of the Peace Court shall have exclusive jurisdiction over agricultural lease matters and requires that service of process for any such action shall be provided. So the point here to this legislation is they would put agricultural leases under the JP Court where all other leases are. So this is just a piece of legislation to do that, and since this is an agricultural community, I wanted you to be aware of that. I don't know that you have any opinion on it, but any problems that would come up with agricultural leases would be handled through the JP Court. And finally, House Bill 159, this bill is moving. This is the bill that you told me last week you supported. This bill prohibits a person from running as a candidate for more than one office in the state or county at the same time. This bill has already passed the House, and it currently is in the Senate Administrative Services Committee, and it was released from that committee last Thursday, the 30th. And that concludes my legislative update.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. One other thing I wanted to bring to your attention while it's on my mind. Next Tuesday, I will not be here to give you your legislative update. Of course, they're not in session, so there shouldn't be anything new to report. But I also wanted you to know that I'll be attending the next meeting of the Wetland Advisory Committee. We haven't heard anything new from them, so next Tuesday will be the first meeting we've had since, I believe, December. And I've also checked with the Ad Hoc Infrastructure Committee that I represent you on, and they haven't even scheduled the next meeting. So I just wanted to give that update.
Wasn't there a big meeting about wetlands?
There was the annual wetland conference.
Annual conference?
Yes, I attended that.
You did attend
yes,
that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, because chairman of Planning and Zoning asked me about it. I didn't even know about it.
That's done every year. That's held every year.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
Two of our Planning Commission members were there because they sat with me.
Yes.
Okay. I do have one wastewater agreement for your consideration this morning.
Please.
Sussex County Project Number 81-04, Barrington Park, Phase 3, a.k.a. Coventry at Barrington Park, Agreement Number 733-4. In this case, the developer will be Mr. Robert Harris of Ocean View. The location is the southwest corner of Road 353 and Road 352. This will become part of the Millville expansion of the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District, serving 10 single-family lots, with connection charges totaling $63,040. We do have approval from our engineering department, as well as from DENREC, and we're expecting just 15 days of construction, with a construction administration and construction inspection cost totaling $4,423.80, and a proposed construction cost of $29,492. And I do have a motion, sir.
Please read your motion.
Mm-hmm. Be it moved that based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department for Sussex County Project Number 81-04, Agreement Number 733-4, that the Sussex County Council execute a construction administration and construction inspection agreement between Sussex County Council and Tire Farm LLC for wastewater facilities to be constructed in Barrington Park, Phase 3. Located in the Millville expansion of the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District.
Pleasure, Council.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Phillips.
Second,
Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Cole. Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Well, yes, motion carried.
Thank you.
Godwin. Thank mm-hmm. you very much. We'll now go to our 10:30 public hearing on conditional use number 1975. Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I will read the